Good morning, everyone. This is Brandon with the Iowa Healthcare Association on January 12, 2022, joined by our representatives from Amerigroup Iowa for our monthly MCO call. We'll get started like we do most of our other calls with informational letters that have been released over the past month that pertain to you all. And one that kind of stuck out to me, probably the only one that's really come out over the last 30 days, is information letter 2301, which is a information letter regarding listening sessions for providers. And what this is it's the Department of Human Services providing the opportunity for providers to participate in different listening session topics, to be able to provide some feedback to the department on each of those topics. And I'll read each of those topics now. Durable medical equipment, which was last week, provider enrollment and credentialing, which is actually tomorrow, managed care RFP, which is January 18th, prior authorization, which is February 10th, and then school-based services, which is February 17th. Within that information letter 2301, you're able to register for each of those events. I have registered for several of the events because I'll want to listen in and participate if I can, or if I have anything to add. And if there's anything that you all would have, feel free to do that as well. That's all that I really had in there, or that I saw within the last month or so for as far as informational letters go. I'll check with John and the Amerigroup team and see if any of you all have any updates you'd like to make prior to going into questions.
Hey, Brandon, it's John. I just wanted to do a couple of things. I want to, you know, sort of acknowledge our situation as it relates to the pandemic currently. And but before that, just acknowledge that we've got a number of associates on today. We have, from provider experience, Cherie Smith Martinez, Patricia Buckland, Don Hobson, Jessica Rito, Megan Lemereau. Megan is on, but doesn't have a voice today. So, others will speak if she has a response to, any of the dialogue. I haven't yet seen Donna, Wentz. She is dealing with a member level issue right now, and will join as soon as she can. So we'll see her in a little bit. I haven't seen Danielle Kratis, but there are some phone numbers out there that I want to just double check to see if Danielle is on as our home health SME. I don't hear her, so I will ping her. I see Jolie Anderson is on. And I don't see Angela Dillon, but just want to double check on that. If you are an Amerigroup associate and you are on and I haven't recognized you, let's give it a second. Please go ahead and announce yourself.
Angela's here.
Hey.
And like John mentioned, they have several individuals on the call, and I know that they've done a good job of, if you do have questions that you submit through the chat, I think that they're all checking through those as well, and yep, will likely provide some responses through there. So if you have questions that weren't submitted ahead of time, you can feel free to put those in there, and so that way we can keep the ball rolling here.
Yep, that very good. I did want to acknowledge our situation. The Omicron COVID variant is hitting Iowa and hitting Iowa hard. And I know it's hitting health providers especially hard. And it's leading to some discussions at the state level on how to manage it, how to react to the situations. We're seeing emergency departments and inpatient utilization, including ICUs, filling up and in some cases overflowing, and it's indiscriminate. It's rural and urban. And we're seeing it within our own associates as well. We've got a number, 515-380-6275, that just came off mute. I'm just encouraging you to put yourself back on mute so that we can not have feedback on the call. Thank you. So that is work and planning and ideating that's happening in real time as it relates to both the managed care organizations and Medicaid members, as well as our populations in Hawkeye and TANF, and how that all plays out with regard to both testing and vaccination. On that last piece, we are Amerigroup is spending a fair amount of time now doing some outreach to a variety of different organizations to make them aware of some public dollars that are available at the Iowa Department of Public Health. And those there is a grant program that's specifically for organizations that are capable of setting up and implementing vaccination awareness campaigns, public information and education campaigns. And we work with a lot of community-based organizations that do a lot of wraparound services for our Medicaid members. And those organizations are well-suited to submit applications for that funding stream. That funding stream can be found on the Department of Public Health website. It's $25 million total. Grants are being granted at up to $250,000 max per grant. And the funding is to address vaccination awareness particularly focused on Iowans that experience some health disparities. Older adults and persons with disabilities certainly fall within that category. The funding is available through 2023, at least according to the application website yesterday. And about 6 million of the 25 has been granted, and only a percentage of that has actually been spent. So there are still plenty of opportunities for organizations like the Iowa Healthcare Association or similar organizations that are interested in helping spread the word to get some funding moving out there and messaging out there through channels that are familiar and respected and listened to. So that's really kind of the update. We are mindful that the pandemic is still here, and that is creating the overarching contours for providing health and long-term services and supports to Medicaid members in Iowa. And that's it. That's all I have right now. Let's give it a minute to see if any of the other associates have updates from their channels within Amerigroup. Okay, I can give it the fair seven count of silence, and if there are updates that that folks want to sprinkle into the conversation, we can do that both in chat and in in verbal responses throughout the next 50 minutes or so.
Awesome, thanks, John. I'll go into some of our pre-submitted questions. I will say that I was late in getting these questions over. They ended up going out yesterday. So we'll try to go through these here quick and see if we can get some responses, and if there's any feedback that John or his team has on some of these pre-submitted questions, we'll try to accomplish that. And then, like I mentioned earlier, if you are having other questions that were not submitted, please put those in the chat, and we'll be looking at those after. This first question is, it's a home health related question, and most of these that were submitted were home health questions. And so hopefully I'm not sure if Danielle has been able to join yet. I'll maybe pause before I go into all these and see if Danielle, were you able to get on yet? Do not hear her yet. We will see, and John, I don't know if anyone else on your team may have answers to these questions, but we'll ask and we'll see. The first one is surrounding G0156, which I think is home health aid services. And this agency is receiving denials after their 14th visit in a month. This code isn't one that requires an authorization, and there hasn't been any kind of limit on the number of those visits in the past. And so the question I think becomes, is this like a one-off situation that this provider themselves is experiencing, or is this affecting multiple providers? And I guess if you are a home health agency on the call, is this something that you're having issues with as well? If you could throw that in the chat, that would be, I think, helpful context for us. And I guess I'll pause there, John, and see if you or anyone else on your team has any update or any thoughts on that issue.
I don't think Danielle is on, but we did get a preliminary scan on this. We're not aware of any program-wide issue on this. It would be great to get examples for review. So whoever submitted this particular question, please pull some claims level information and provide it to your provider representative. We just wanted to note that while revenue codes 0570 and 0579 billed with HCPCS codes, G0156 do not require authorization. They do contribute to the five initial visits allowed to start care and should be included in the planning process. Claims level detail is needed here. Grab that and get it over to your provider's experience representative so that we can really take a close look and see what's going on.
Thanks, John. This next one is an assisted living and EVV related question. This ALF, assisted living facility, did the optional attestation. So therefore they've completed that process to make it so they didn't have to follow EVV because of using shift workers. And so they've been receiving denials for one of their services, at least the S5125, with the denial stating that it did not come through EVV. This was occurring as recently as last month. And the question is there any type of additional coding or modifiers or anything like that that assisted living can put on their claims so that they're not receiving the denial saying that they need to go through EVV?
Am I off mute? Can you hear me? All right. Well, let me pause first. Is Danielle on yet? No. I'm good. Angela Dillon. I know you're on. Can you please ping Danielle and ask if she can join this call or if she's in process and just trying to transition from a meeting? Thank you. Okay, some claims level information would be helpful. Make sure you grab an example and get that to your provider solutions rep so that we know for certain what's going on. Our operations folks report that they believe that this is resolved, but providers might be seeing some claims run out where resolution is still pending. We know that the assisted living facility fix was put into place in October 20 of 21. And note that there's possibility that we're still educating new claims processors where the denials are occurring erroneously. So please provide an example of what you're seeing and get it to your provider solutions, provider experience representatives so that we can research exactly what's going on.
Thanks, John. And I don't think that there's any like additional information that you need to put on the claim. I think I was thinking that there was some kind of internal recognition based off of completing that attestation. I don't think that there needs to be a modifier. I'm not aware of one that needed to go additionally on the claim to indicate that you were one of those that did not have to follow through with EBB. Just based off of, I guess, what I've heard from other providers. So I don't think that should be the issue. I think, you know, what John had mentioned as being the solution going into place in October and some potential additional training or claims run out, like you mentioned, that may need to go into place here. But I don't think that there's anything new that needs to go on for that code specifically. These next several are home health, and a couple of these next two are actually EVV related as well. So from a home health perspective, the question is, we're not able to control the amount or the rate that those claims end up getting submitted to Amerigroup through CareBridge or through the EVV vendor. But several have still paid at the old or an older rate, not an updated 7/1/21 rate. The question is, have those projects been auto, or have they already gone through to where they'd update to the new rate? And if they have, and a provider still has claims paid at the old rate, what should they do to get that updated?
Am I off mute? I'm sorry, I'm not looking at that screen.
Yeah.
All right. These should be completed. The rates were loaded, early last fall. We need some examples on what you're seeing so that we know what's going on. Anything that may not have been reprocessed, but the provider should have been, please share that with your rep so that we can see what exactly is going on in this case. So I'll pause there. I think the next question is kind of a similar question, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very similar thing of a code through EVV not processing at a published rate, I suppose, by Amerigroup is what the indication is here. S5125 code processing at S5130 rate.
Again, examples for anything that may not have been reprocessed, but the provider believes should have been, should be shared with your rep. Without the example, it's hard to tell what exactly is going on. So that'll be very helpful to get some details over to your provider experience rep.
Awesome. Another home health question. Cost containment did a recoupment for duplicated payments. However, they recouped both payments instead of just one. The provider is now without any payment for those dates of service. Claims go back as far as 2018. And cannot be appealed through availability as the service dates are outside the date range of availability. What's the recommended process the provider should use to get these claims to reprocess so they can at least so they will receive the one payment that they are due for those services?
Yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up. Has this been shared with your provider rep? My response question, without seeing that level of detail, I don't know that we can, address that here. I just strongly encourage you to share the details with your reps so that they can research exactly what's going on.
Obviously several of these questions result in making sure that you're working with your provider rep, and I would guess that majority of these questions, they probably already have started that process and maybe haven't seen resolution to the issue yet. Is there anything else that they should be doing or any other avenue that they can use in any of these circumstances to help maybe resolve or move forward the issue that they're experiencing?
So this is John. I'm not on the provider experience team. That is the process that I know of that providers have to access, but I'm going to encourage one of the provider experience reps on the meeting today to address your question.
Hey, John, this is Patty Buckland. I would echo that. I know we did have some staffing issues, you know, end of last quarter. We're going into the new year fully staffed with our team. So hopefully any issues that would result in a delay in that capacity would be alleviated. Although I know at the top of the call, we talked about COVID, and I know that's impacting everybody. I just would strongly encourage folks to reach out to the provider rep. I know both Don and Peyton are on here. I reached out to them in the chat and said, get them to me. I know I've worked with both of them individually as well. But for the question in regards to cost containment, the provider is correct. Availity does have a sunset of data of 1 year out. So for any data serviced in 18 and 19 and now, you know, 2020, will not be showing in availability if you wish to dispute that claim. However, anything that's in a cost containment workflow where you got a notice from cost containment, a recoup refund letter, or something of that nature, the provider needs to work with cost containment. Doing a dispute in availability will not resolve that issue. But again, if they're having troubles reaching out to cost containment, they can reach out to their provider rep and we can help coordinate that. I know cost containment on all of their letters has their phone number, fax, usually and a specific agent that's in regards to the project or task. So hopefully that's helpful information to that end. Does that help?
Yeah, I think that's helpful context. And this kind of rolls into the next question that is was submitted, and it's talking about, you know, when they get those cost and those dispute letters or those letters from cost containment, the unit that they need to end up disputing more times than not, I think, because the recoupment shouldn't be happening. You know, providers are putting well thought out messages and logical messages into why they don't think that these funds should be recouped. And more times than not, they're not getting a response, and funds are just recouped. And so they receive no, I guess, rationale as to why the recoupment was upheld by cost containment. And so really, it feels like there is no avenue once something goes to cost containment for us to be able to dispute those claims and have any chance of keeping those funds appropriately. And I think that's, you know, part of the frustration that, and I know neither of you are cost containment, right? But I think that's the sentiment that we're experiencing or we're hearing when things end up having to go through cost containment, that there is no avenue for us to be able to really keep those funds that are owed to us, because most of the time those recoupment projects are, I'll call them invalid, because they shouldn't be happening. And so I don't know how the workflow goes between Amerigroup and the cost containment team, which I'm sure is some contracted third-party vendor. But I think that's kind of the experience that is being had, and I don't know if that's necessarily appropriate, because there should be some appeals rights that are actually actionable. So I don't know if there's a comment back to that or not, but that's kind of the experience.
Sure. So the letters that I've seen that do go out to providers, they have a dispute process listed. So usually there's a letter, you know, hey, this is the project. This is why we're pulling funds back for these claims. And then, I mean, sometimes those are multiple pages, depending on how big the report is, if it's one claim or if it's a series. And then at the bottom of that is a payment coupon, like just like an old school power bill or cable bill, you know. And so if providers dispute with cost containment, or send money back to cost containment, they need to include that payment coupon so that we know what project they're referencing, what claims are affected, et cetera. A lot of times, as I support providers through a train wreck situation, they're missing that payment coupon, or they tried to dispute the claims in availability, which is not appropriate for anything that is cost containment driven. That is a separate area. The availability dispute process is only for underpaid claims, like you got an EOB and your claim didn't get paid according to your expectations. So sometimes just those individual processes are what is causing the problem. So I totally understand your feedback. It's feedback that myself and everyone in Provider Solutions, we get from a variety of providers all the time, and we'd be happy to help support that process. But if you're sending a check-in to us or you're wishing to dispute something that we've picked up as overpaid, like the number one thing that I get all the time is providers are frustrated, absolutely, but then we also have issues on the Amerigroup side because providers are not disputing things correctly or they're not including the appropriate details. Does that help? I mean, I can't speak to every, that's a very simplified overglossing scenario. So that kind of circles back to reach out to your provider rep if you have specific issues or examples or claims or even a notice that you don't understand what it means. Most of the time when I help providers with cost containment issues, it usually cycles back to some kind of a Medicaid rate change. So please keep in mind we're beholden to the Medicaid rates. And then number two, like other health insurance. We picked up that the member has other health insurance. So those are pretty black and white examples. And of course, there could be other things that are beyond that, but those are the most common ones.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I think, you know, I guess if we're submitting dispute letters wrong, it would be helpful to know that we're submitting dispute letters wrong. I think maybe that's part of the issue is if there needs to be a code on there, or if we're sending something that says, hey, we're wanting to dispute this project and we're missing an identifier. I don't know if it's out of the realm of possibilities to expect some kind of response saying, hey, we can't really do anything with this because X, Y, Z was not included on this. Because right now it's just we have zero clue and then funds are taken back and we're sitting without.
Yeah. So I do know, just for some clarifying details. And we had several slides attributed to this issue in the Iowa Medicaid annual provider training that happened in November, kind of going through how to contact cost containment and what that dispute process can look like. Unfortunately, if a provider sends stuff to us, short of it being a check and it's not identified as being in a cost containment project, we wouldn't know either. So it's like black hole trying to serve black hole, and that's not getting us anywhere. If a provider does dispute a cost containment issue in availability, if it's a data service within scope that they can do that, if it's an old data service like our question was, you can't even see it. But if it's a data service that's within scope, our claims payment disputes team, they will send a letter back to the provider and saying, hey, this was not appropriate. You need to reach out to cost containment, and they do give the phone number, fax number, that kind of thing. So I hear what you're saying, and I know we're trying to make it work better. I don't have a lot more to say about that.
No, that's
but
okay.
I would just say if anybody on this call has severe issues, questions, stuff that's old that they need to be made whole with, we're back to the original thing of please reach out to your provider rep. And my name's on it too. You can reach out to me. All of us are here to try to help. So, and I can dig up the Iowa Medicaid annual provider training slides and share them with John. If you'd like to share that with this group, it was good information about both claims payment disputes, cost containment disputes, that kind of thing. We really went into detail with the Iowa Medicaid training.
That would be great. I really appreciate your stepping in and offering that, Patricia. And I will certainly make sure to cascade that. If you send that to me, I'll cascade that out to Brandon.
Right on. Yeah. But I do know Iowa Medicaid put all that junk on their website too, but I know that can be cumbersome. So I'll go ahead and get it over to you, John, today so you can share.
Awesome. Thank you. I do want to note that Donna Wendt and Danielle Kratis have joined the meeting. And I'd like to take a little bit of a program break here, Brandon, to give Donna a chance to provide or announce some breaking, sort of breaking news in the claims processing world as it relates to providers on this call. So, Donna, if you're ready, I'm handing the mic to you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Hi, guys. This is Donna. And I was late because I was asked to join a meeting about an operations that was going to go into effect. And I think this will make some people very happy. So they're going to be putting an edit in place today for the EA4 issue that's been happening. That's that unilateral code, denying for unilateral issue. There was a provider update that was sent out in October and addressing this issue. And I think maybe it didn't explain it very well, or it just didn't go into enough depth as to what the provider should be billing for. But the basic issue is that they're billing with a unilateral diagnosis code, and they should be billing with a more unspecified code, such as R6889 or something to that effect. And we've seen it with a lot of our services, but it seems like our high volume tend to be more hospital-based, and then the private duty nursing and the individual CDAC. So in Iowa, those tend to be the higher volumes that we've seen with this edit, resulting in denials. So they're going to be putting that claim edit in today, and those claims will be reprocessed and paid this weekend. But I was really want to make sure that if you are getting those denials, that you look at that diagnosis code that you're billing with and make sure that it's an appropriate diagnosis code. And you might want to change your process to use that unspecified billing code versus the unilateral billing code. So I hope that makes some folks very happy, and hopefully we can get everybody kind of made whole with the claims that have been denied so far.
Donna, did you say there's a provider update that went out in October?
Yeah, it went out in October. I can send it to Brandon. I'm looking at it right now. It has some helpful links in there about the billing codes, but I think it might be just a good reminder. And maybe, you know, it didn't get shared with the people that it needed to be shared with as well. So it's always good to kind of.
Can you copy me or send it to me and I can send it to Brandon? It doesn't matter. I want to be able to see it because I didn't see it when it went out. And I do know this is sort of a standing question that came over from the December meeting.
Absolutely. I'll just send it to you, John, and then you can disseminate.
Okay. And that's helpful and timely. Brandon, do you have any questions to follow up with Donna?
I don't, not right now, I don't think. Then, which conveniently that actually, I think, answers the last question that we had pre-submitted, which was on that EA4 diagnosis or EA4 denial. And so I think that was a timely response by Donna. So appreciate that, Donna.
And to answer Rachel, she just put in the chat for that diagnosis error, is the new edit going to allow those unspecified codes to process? It will. That edit is going to be going back into play. So this isn't going to be a permanent fix because the goal is to really have the providers bill with the CMS guidelines, which is using that unspecified code rather than the unilateral code. So this is just to get everybody made whole at this point and to get all of those claims processed correctly, and then we'll go forward. So it's really important that the providers are using the correct billing diagnosis codes.
Awesome. Thanks, Donna.
And I'm not sure what the 252 denial issue is, so all I can speak for today right now is the EA4 issue.
Oh, yeah, that's the EOB. The 252 is EOB denial, requesting from another insurance or from Medicare. I did include in the chat that annual training from 2021 the Iowa Medicaid Annual Provider Training, which was being referenced earlier. And so within that link, you'll be able to find the presentations that were completed on each of the days. I also included, because Cherie sent me over the Amerigroup Provider Experience map, I wanted to include that again for anyone. I know we've talked significant about provider experience and working with those individuals. We wanted to make sure that you had the most updated map for those people. And so we put that in the chat as well. I'm going to flip through the questions now. I think the first one that we had is a continued problem with claims being run through the AmeriVantage plan and denying when they're billing for Medicaid services. Has there been any additional discussion or fixes for those situations when that's happening? That anyone's aware of, I guess. I remember I think we brought this up on a few calls now, where it almost seems like the claim is being processed through that Medicare Advantage plan when it's actually for the Medicaid services. And so, and they may not even have the AmeriVantage plan, is my understanding in some instances.
Yeah. So I know Cherie is on, and I know Cherie spoke to a system change that allowed our provider solutions and provider experience folks to see claims that are submitted that should be billed against AmeriVantage or should be billed against Amerigroup. So I'd invite Cherie to respond if you are able to get yourself off mute.
Okay, I think I got myself off mute. I apologize. I was struggling trying to get that screen to open back up because I was looking at other things. Okay, so I think the last call that I was on, and I know there's been a meeting, at least one meeting in between there, we had just found out it wasn't that we can actually see the Medicare claims, but that there is a mechanism within our escalation system that we can make sure that those get routed to the right team to get reprocessed, where before we didn't have that link to the Medicare side. So I apologize. That's not a question that we researched. There is work in process. And I'm going to go ahead when we're done with this meeting and I'll find out the status of what's happening when those claims cross over to have, you know, the root cause fix. And then we can report back to your team, your membership as to what the, you know, what the status of that is and what the fix will be. And it may already be in place. I apologize. It's just not something that we researched prior to the meeting. And since I'm off mute right now, can I just comment? I just want to back up to the recoupment piece for just a second and let the membership know that there are two forms that are available on our website. And those forms will let you tell when you're in agreement that a recoupment is correct. There are two forms on our website, and one will be that you can submit the form with a payback, but the other one is to set up offset off of future payments. And so both of those forms can be very beneficial in, you know, resolving the recoupment process. And then one other thing on the recoupment, I noticed in the chat that somebody indicated that they were recouped and that they actually did not get a notice. When there is recoupment, there should be a notice. Sometimes that's an issue with what mailing address exists and where it might have gone. But if you're seeing those kinds of recoupments, I'm going to go ahead and pull. There is a general address and contact information for recoupment, and I will get that over to your organization so that you have that for all recoupments, and you can just keep that information. And then again, when you have that situation, please reach out to your rep. And that's why I provided the most recent map so that you know who your rep is and we can help you get those things taken care of. So I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, thanks, Cherie. Julianne, I think I'd maybe reach out to your rep and make sure that they have the right address for you on, since I know you'd mentioned not getting a letter for that.
Brandon, just to elaborate on something you touched on with regard to the Medicare Advantage D-SNP product, it is quite likely that there is an AmeriGroup member on the Medicaid side enrolled in a Medicare Advantage D-SNP product with another health plan. The AmeriAdvantage D-SNP health plan was only launched on 1/1/21, so we're a year into it, whereas there's one plan that's been on for 2 years and another plan that's been on for 3 years. Then there's another plan that started 1/1/2022. So there are four out there right now. And we're a state that does not require the terminology is dual citizenship within Medicare and Medicaid. Some states require that. This state does not. So you could be in one Medicaid coverage, MCO, and be in a completely different Medicaid or Medicare MCO in Iowa.
Thanks, John. I'm going to flip through the rest of the chat here. This one is on the processing of claims and reprocessing, and saying that in some instances when claims have been denied and error, the wait to actually get those to repay is in excess of 75 days. Is that standard, or is that the timeline that AmeriGroup would expect a denial that's received incorrectly for them to actually get completely through the process and have the claims paid? Is that the expected time frame?
I'm sorry, Brandon, I didn't understand your question.
I think the question is, for claims that are denied incorrectly, is the expected turnaround time to get those paid, should that be around 75 days, or what would be the expectation of a turnaround time from when a denial is received to when that claim is then fixed? And I know it probably depends on when you receive notification that it was denied incorrectly.
Right.
But I guess assume that that's right away.
So, okay, if a claim is denied or underpaid and the provider gets their EOB and they review their AR and they're like, oh, this is not good, and they dispute it, and that would be using the Availity tools, it can take up to 75 days if it has to go through medical review or maybe we got to backtrack to Iowa Medicaid, check the rates, that kind of thing. So that can take 75 days. We like 30 days better. Of course, everybody does. And then like we talked about at the top of the call, all of our teams at AmeriGroup have been impacted by, persons being out of office for COVID, holidays, whatever. So we do have significant delays in a variety of our processes internally that would require a human person to do the work. So if it's a service that is auto adjudicated, or we get rates from Iowa Medicaid and those get auto adjusted, of course, that's going to happen a lot quicker than anything that would involve a human intervention. So 75 days is not our goal. Our goal is 30 days, but we have seen things go up to 75 days and sometimes even closer to 90, Brandon and team, depending on how that is rolling.
So Patty, mm-hmm. Patty, this is Dawn Logan at Iowa Home Care. And yeah. I'm going to tell you, if we call in to talk to a provider rep and they can see what's wrong with the claim and they send it back and tell us it's going to be 30 days and we call in 30 days and it's still not done, and they tell us, well, we can send it back, but it'll be another 30 to 45 days. We can do that on one claim probably 3 or 4 times. I don't understand why it takes so long when your provider rep on the phone can even see what's wrong with the claim.
I guess the nuts and bolts of it, Dawn, is that's just the process. I know we're working to make it better.
The process shouldn't be, say, tell us to wait 30 days for a resolution, and then in 30 days, tell us to wait another 30 days, and in 30 days, tell us to wait another 30 days. I don't get cut any breaks for timely filing or timely filing of appeals here due to COVID. I don't understand how that's appropriate for you guys to use as an excuse. 90 days to get a claim paid that was denied wrong to begin with it's ridiculous, and it's a cash flow issue.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I understand, and we can definitely take that back to our leaderships. But if the question is it taking 75 days or more? My answer is that's what we're seeing, unfortunately.
The next one I have is, if the denial indicates that we're missing or have incorrect information on the claim, how or where can we find what was missing or incorrect? With that, I assume that's probably some kind of outreach to the provider experience individual, because they're the only ones that would be able to review the claim, at least from a provider. Who the provider should reach out to be able to see what is missing, and they need at least be able to answer the question, or more than likely, maybe not more than likely, but they could also have the ability to reach out to someone within claims to determine what is missing if there is a denial received for that reason. This next question is, when there's a cost containment project going on or an audit being done for a past time frame, the question is, do you halt recoupments when there is an audit going on, or how does that work process flow? Because there are times where we're receiving a recoupment from cost containment, and we have an audit going on for the same time frame, which is also asking for the funds back. And I know, I think we brought this up before, but should one of those be halted when the review is being done for the exact same time frame?
I think we answered that one in the chat, Brandon. I'm scrolling okay. Back through.
Okay, and that's very possible. I haven't got to the bottom yet.
This is Deb. I posed that question. I may not have seen the chat and double dipping, but this is a consistent. I get a recoupment letter. I'm in an audit from IME. I get the response from Amerigroup. Then Amerigroup does their own audit. I could touch this stuff 4 and 5 times. The same time I'm under audit.
I'm confused, Deb. Where are you getting the audit from? Is it also from Amerigroup, or is it from a different group?
Cotivity.
So Cotivity, they do our audits, and they are in conjunction with recoupment or overpayment projects. So to me, that would be like one and the same. So I don't think the recoupment process is put on hold because the Cotivity records review is part of that inquiry.
So if the two things are going on simultaneously,
I think they're the same path.
They're not, because I get an Amerigroup request for a recoup.
Correct.
Separate letter, 3 or 4 people. Then I go through audit and I get a similar ask for money back. If I pay one, I'm not sure the other one knows it.
But I am telling you right now that they're not the same group, but they're the same path. So when we identify an potentially overpaid claim, our job per our Iowa Medicaid agreement is to send a notice to the provider. So that's why you get the letter from Amerigroup. Then it is Cotivity who is doing our records review. So they're the ones that are going to request the records. And then if the records you send satisfy that inquiry, then the recoupment is done. It was overturned. It's no longer asking for funds back. And usually then you get a retraction letter from Amerigroup to close the loop with you. If the records you sent were not sufficient to overcome the inquiry, then the funds will continue to be due. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. It's quite cumbersome from a provider's perspective to get multiple requests for payment in return. It would be helpful to limit that to one contact point, because I'm going back and tying that out and then providing information that I paid it based on a recoupment back to Cotiviti or whomever that I paid it on a recoupment. Incredibly cumbersome, and we've gotten doubled. So I'll be more careful going forward.
Patty, this is Dawn Hobson. I was just going to add, it's really super important when you get those cost containment unit letters that you recognize that they are time sensitive. And if you are under an audit at that time, you would dispute that cost containment letter in a timely fashion so that they can actually do the process to hopefully halt that.
Okay, thanks.
This next question is, we have PSO claims that are still denied. They were told an estimated date of completion was 1/10/22, which is obviously a couple days ago. But the claims are still sitting there. They're denied and they've been appealed timely, but the appeals are just sitting there. They don't have any kind of status update on those. Is there any thoughts or comments on that question?
Yeah, so Brandon and Megan added the response to Liz later. The dates on those is the date of the completion of the correction. And at that point, the claims would move into the re-adjudication process. So could take another week, potentially 10 days for the provider to get new remits, depending on if they're electronic or still getting paper remits and checks. So it's kind of just like a benchmark. I would give it a few more days and you should see that the claims will resolve.
Awesome. Now that I'm getting through the chat, I'm starting to see some of the responses. So I appreciate the team from Amerigroup sending those responses to those individuals. I guess now I got to verify if they were responded to or not. One that I saw, and just tell me if this has been answered already. We started to receive an overpayment request for physical, occupational, and speech therapy services that they provided several years ago, even though the client was receiving care through the home health agency. The denial is basically saying that, you know, we're not going to pay an outside agency for these services because they're in a nursing home. But they aren't. They are at home. So any thoughts on those denials? Is anyone else seeing that, I guess, is the question? And if not, it's probably a one-off deal, Jen, but I'll let Amerigroup or anyone from there respond if they have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I would say, and again, without looking at the member example or the project scope, I don't have all the details, but I would say, Jen, that something we received prompted us to go back and look for the services that were reimbursed during that time frame. If the member was not in a nursing facility and so therefore the recoupment is not appropriate, you would just want to dispute it. If you need support, you can reach out to your provider rep. We'd be happy to support you with that process. But usually when things go back that far, which is not particularly typical, we receive something that indicates that that may be the truth. Sometimes that comes from case management. Sometimes that comes from Medicare. Sometimes that comes from a variety, of places. So without looking at that specific member, I can't tell you what we got and how we got it, but that does happen from time to time.
A question on the 252 denial, which is the EOB denial that we've been having issues with for the entirety of managed care, I suppose, here. are we anywhere closer to some kind of a resolution on providers inappropriately receiving those denials? And, you know, they're putting on that Z code, which indicates that an EOB is not needed, but we're still seeing the denials asking for an EOB. And so any comments as to what more we can do, I suppose, since we are putting the appropriate information on there to indicate that we do not need an EOB? Any thoughts on that? Not seeing any or hearing any.
I would just say, Brandon, make sure you're providing the provider solutions representative with the claims level example to be sure that we are, you know, so that we can verify whether it's being billed correctly or whether it's the processing is an error due to, you know, the fact that it's processed manually.
Hey guys, I got a quick question, John. I mean, and you can probably tell by the chat because I can see people already responding in. You know, we've all done that. This is a systemic issue that your corporate team needs to handle, not a provider rep. This has to be dealt with at your guys' level. The provider reps are overwhelmed. They can't handle it. We're billing accurately. And then, you know, my question back to the association is, and to Amerigroup, what is being reported to the state? Because this isn't a provider issue. This is truly you guys paying incorrectly. So who is our contact that is going to resolve these issues? Providers can't keep up.
Exactly. I never unmute myself, but I have to on this because I spend too much time with these EOB denials specifically. There's other issues, but this one in particular, it's been going on since the inception of the MCOs in Iowa. And it just, we've been told too many times it's going to be fixed and it never is. And then somehow there's like another code that'll come in, like the 479, but it's also an EOB. So sometimes the codes are slightly different, but we've had this too many times. And yeah, and our biller just chimed in. We've been told over and over this has been fixed, but she bills 100% right. We've provided so many examples. So we really, at this point, we've got to have a solution. We want to play nice and work perfectly, amazingly well together. We really do. That's everybody's goal. But this is a big issue for us.
Thanks, Cindy and Casey on that. I mean, completely agree. You know, we've been battling this for 6 years on coming to a solution. And it seems, and maybe it's just, you know, reported to me in waves, but it seems like it kind of comes in waves where we see larger volumes of it, then we see maybe lesser volumes, and maybe that's just how it's reported to me, and I'm just not hearing it as often, or we just don't want to sound like a broken record, and so I'm not hearing it every single month from everybody, which is possible because it's just been ongoing. I will say that, you know, we're working with the department on I'll call it a task force, I suppose, on how we can look at MCO billing issues or denial issues and stuff like that. And so we are working with them on setting up a group to look at these. And this is obviously going to be at the top of the list because it's a denial that's been going on for this long, and it affects not only home health, but it affects all of our members. And so this would be one of those areas that we would look at. So that's one thing, I suppose, that we're at the association level working to do as far as identifying these. And we'll likely work with many of you all to get some of the claim specific examples that will be needed to back up, I guess, the claims of any issues that have been happening. So that's, as far as our end, that's kind of what we're doing. I don't know if anyone at the team of Amerigroup has anything to mention. I know we're a minute over on time, and I don't see any more questions in the chat other than follow-ups to the conversation we're having right now.
We do not appreciate the feedback. Thank you. And I know we have team members that are dropping to get over to their 12:30 meeting.
Hey, John, this is Casey. I mean, you cannot not respond to the questions. So who is our corporate contact at Amerigroup that we can take this to? Because we can't continue working with provider reps. So who can people call right now when we get off this call to get this resolved? We have to be able to work with you guys.
So Dawn, I don't have a name or a number for you. Your provider reps in Iowa are your best advocates, and we have been trying to resolve this along with the claims and information that you provide to us. And I'm just going to tell you, this is a very, very large and complicated organization, Anthem is, we will continue to be your advocate, but I don't have a phone number or a name or a contact for you.
There's got to be some type of grievance we can file. It literally has been 3 months since we heard from our provider rep on a spreadsheet of issues. So I can't be told to go to my provider rep when my provider rep doesn't respond for 3 months.
We can work with you all to provide, elevated contacts above your provider representative if you are not receiving a response. And so, Casey, we can work with you on a supervisor, I suppose, at this point to help elevate that. And
yeah, I mean, I think, and I can see other people chiming in, same thing with everybody else. I mean, you know, so I think just as a team of healthcare providers, we've just got to do better. As providers, we need paid. As insurers, you know, they need good bills. We both agree to do that. But when we get to these situations where we just can't, it's just not working, you know, I think we probably just, and Brandon, if we can maybe even just have a separate call, I think we're going to have to do something. People of Iowa deserve better.
I have every confidence that claims are being submitted appropriately in 95% of the cases, I'll say. And yeah. I agreed. We can take it offline and have further discussion on it. That's completely fine with me and appropriate. Perfect. So, I appreciate everyone chiming in with your experiences in the chat or verbally. I'll say I appreciate having our representatives from Amerigroup on the line too. Not every provider group has the availability or the ability to have these folks on the calls with us, and to be able to ask these questions and have these conversations. And so we appreciate their ability to join us and give thoughtful responses, when available. And so, wanted to make sure that was known as well. So we'll continue battling this issue and then trying to work with all parties to come to a solution on this and, you know, several of the other issues that we've talked about here today. And so again, thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll work towards this, and everyone have a good rest of the week. Thank you.